got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, we ended the college football season talking about, you know, who could win next year. Who are the contenders nationally next year? How hard will it be for Ohio State without its offensive and defensive coordinator? Will Notre Dame be the team to beat? Penn State, they've got a lot coming back. And they add Ohio State's D coordinator to their coaching staff. Dan Lanning and the Ducks, lot of holes to fill in the defensive backfield. And now they've lost Junior Adams, their receiver coach. Will that affect recruiting? The ability for Oregon to get great players at the wide receiver position. Here to talk about that and a whole bunch more, Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On College Football Podcast, a guy who's doing a lot more than just Locked On College Football as a podcast. Spencer McLaughlin, also the voice of the Southern Utah football and basketball programs and a whole bunch going on in his life. Did I get that right? Is it Southern Utah football and basketball?
It is indeed. It is indeed okay. Southern Utah, and I could hear your brain wrangling around trying to find the mascot. Thunderbirds is what you were looking for.
Thunderbirds. The Thunderbirds.
The only Division I Thunderbirds university in all of college athletics.
Well, there you have it. That's probably why I stumbled on it. Give me an idea. Let's start with Junior Adams in Oregon, because you know the Oregon program. I'm wrestling with, I don't know how much of a recruiter slash developer he was, but it looked to me like guys wanted to play for him and Oregon was getting better receivers than they ever got. Is that now a question mark for Dan Lanning as Junior Adams goes to the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, you question your own knowledge of the situation, but I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. And this isn't the first time that Lanning has lost a high-end position coach. You know, Carlos Lachlan moved on from Oregon to Ohio State ahead of last season. Adrian Clem left after the first year, and the two guys to replace them have been absolutely stellar. You know, when I look at position coaches, I'm evaluating them from afar in three ways. How do you recruit? How do you develop? And then what's the production from the position group you're overseeing? And the results for Junior Adams as Oregon's wide receiver coach since he came down from Washington in 2022, they have been outstanding, and I'm confident Dan Lanning has got, you know, the Rolodex he's mentioned before, that has got plenty of coaches that can step in and can recruit well and develop and get a lot out of the wide receiver room. I don't doubt that he's capable of doing that. I just know that he had a really good one here, and that's of course why he brought him over the first place. I think he was one of the highest paid position coaches on Oregon staff. They have never recruited. John, when I was growing up, which wasn't all that long ago, frankly, the idea of Oregon landing the number one wide receiver in a class was absolutely insane. That was the number one overall player when Kayvon Thibodeau committed in 2019. That was a landmark moment, to be sure. But on the list of position groups where I would have said, well, Oregon could maybe go get the number one player at this spot, wide receiver would have been close to last, and he has just completely reshaped the recruiting standard in that room and the caliber of guys that they're bringing in via high school in the portal and churning out NFL draft picks each of the last couple of years. Going into 2023, Oregon hadn't had a 1,000-yard receiver as a program since 2018, and in 2023, they had two of them in the same year. And, yeah, that's a credit to the offensive coordinator, Will Stein, as well, and the quarterback, Bo Nix. But you have to look at that position group coach and say, boy, he's doing a heck of a job. And you know, bringing in DeCorian Moore, huge. And the way that Troy Franklin grew and the way that Tez Johnson, you know, went from a relative unknown to someone who is now shooting up NFL draft boards and might be a mid-round pick. He did a phenomenal job. So, you know, the sky's not falling. Oregon's recruiting for wide receivers isn't about to just completely fall off depending on who they are able to hire here, but I don't think there's any way to slice it. It's certainly one that stings and that needs to be replaced with another guy, or else you'd see a difference in the caliber of player Oregon has in that position group.
Recruiting is so important. to what these programs are doing. I kind of expect that Dan Lanning's going to lose assistant coaches, and I think he has a piece with it as well, as Kenny Dillingham got hired away and Adrian Clem left early on, and you know, he's seen guys come and go. Are you confident that Will Stein and Dan Lanning, that that core group is together, and how confident are you about the defensive side of the ball and Tosh Lapoy as a coordinator? Is that a question mark at all in your mind, or is Lapoy the guy all the way next season calling the defense?
Well, I'll start with the offensive side of things. I know that Will Stein isn't necessarily the most popular Oregon coach right now, because the first half of the Rose Bowl was, let's be honest, it was terrible for Oregon's offense. But this is a guy who came into the Big Ten and averaged about 35 points a game after churning out one of the most productive offenses in the country in 2023, who also has produced consecutive Heisman Trophy finalist quarterbacks. That's not normal. That's not to be overlooked or brushed off in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, offensively, again, we'll see who they hire, but I think that there has been, you know, a level of brand power established for Oregon bringing in wide receivers that guys will take note of. And, you know, the next guy is going to be able to build on that, much like Alik Terry did with what Adrian Clem was able to pull off. But Oregon right now is going after two of the best offensive linemen in the class of 2026. And, you know, that's not something you just do right away. You have to build a little bit over time. But, you know, Terry's just done a phenomenal job with back-to-back Joe Moore Award finalist offensive line units. So I think that was the right hire there. On the defensive side of the ball, you're only looking at Oregon's defense and asking questions in the big games. And those are fair questions to ask. Against every playoff team that Oregon played last year, they, of course, beat all of them except for Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. But Ohio State, Penn State, Boise State, all college football playoff teams all put up 30 or more points, and two of those games were at Austin Stadium. But that's the only, you know, next step that the Oregon defense has to be able to take, because if you look at the way they defended everybody else throughout the year, it's exactly what you would expect. And I think the defense has improved in each of the last couple of years under Lupoi and Lanning's tutelage and Chris Hampton, who just won 24/7 Sports Recruiter of the Year for how he brought in secondary players in the 2025 class. I think those guys are doing a good job, but certainly that is kind of the next benchmark for them to clear. But their points per game average has come down each of the last couple of seasons, and I think they have been recruiting at a phenomenally high level, so there are no questions there. The question just becomes, are they going to improve as a coaching staff to be better in those big games, because that's the only thing where they've really come up short.
Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On College Football, Locked On Ducks podcast. He hosts two of them. Spencer, the Ducks' window to win. Some are saying the window's closed. Some are saying the window's open. How do you see it?
What are we defining as the window exactly, and what are we defining as winning is how I would
National ask. Championship. National championship, is it still out there for Dan Lanning in Oregon in this window, or are we talking 2, 3, 4 years down the road we'll revisit this?
Well, I think as long as Dan Lanning's the head coach, you should expect Oregon to be in the conversation every single year. I have no doubts about that. I do think 2025 is a little bit of a soft reset, you know, not to the point where they'll fall off like Washington or TCU did after their runs to the national championship game, or Michigan this past year that barely made a bowl game. I don't think you're looking at that level of drop-off, but I don't have the same national championship expectations for Oregon in 2025, because they're just losing so much. And, you know, I can talk about the roster turnover for the next 20 minutes if you want to take the rest of the show off and people want to hear all that, or you just tune into Locked On Ducks every day. You know, either one works, frankly. Or I could just go straight to, we don't know what Dante Moore is at quarterback yet. I know that the potential is there. I know this offense has been well catered to helping quarterbacks succeed, but I still haven't seen those things happen on the field. And I'm not an SEC homer, John, so I'm not going to play hypotheticals just to make a particular point. And I think that for Oregon next year, yeah, they should expect to make the playoff. That in the 12-team era is an annual expectation. But if you still have the 4-team playoff, I wouldn't expect Oregon. I'd say the potential can be there with the way they recruit and bring guys in via the portal. Sure, the potential is there. But to say that the expectation is that that happens, you know, Michigan made the playoff twice before they won their national championship. And by the way, they almost didn't win that if they hadn't picked up a 4th-and-2 late in the fourth quarter against Alabama. That never happens. So I think for Oregon, the window continues as long as you keep stacking top 10 recruiting classes. But I do think some years will be more advantageous to go after it than others. I think 2026, you'll have a lot of returning talent, a lot more experienced talent as well. We don't know what portal moves they'll have made by then, of course. But if Dante Moore starts this year and shows some progress and real promise like he showed coming out of high school, and then comes back in 2026, to me, that's a better opportunity for you to go out and win a national championship than a guy who, you know, started, got benched because he kept throwing the ball to the other team, and then sat out this past season. I think that'd be asking a lot of him to step in and lead a team to a national championship and to place that as an expectation in what will be his first full year starting in college football.
Lincoln Riley at USC. I know you talk a little bit and think a little bit about USC on the Locked On College Football podcast, but USC's getting him everything that he could potentially want to need. They have beefed up his coaching staff. They got him a director of player personnel. Jen Cohen, the athletic director at USC, she knows. She's got $80 million left on his contract, so she might as well give him the resources, and if he doesn't do it, his seat gets warm. How warm is that seat for Lincoln Riley at USC in your view?
That depends on the appetite of the big money boosters at USC with regards to Lincoln Riley's buyout, because it is a large sum of money. Even by college athletic standards in 2025, John, it's a lot of money. So going into next year, I don't think he has to win a certain number of games or he's fired. I think going into 2025, he has to win a certain number of games or he's on the hot seat the next year. And, you know, if it becomes a Clay Helton, whatever that start was, 1-3 the year that he got fired midseason, then, you know, that could happen, but not in 2025. In 2026, yes. If they have the same season as a year ago, and, you know, they wind up 6-6, then going into 2026, Lincoln Riley will be squarely on the hot seat, and he'll be coaching for his job. Sometimes that lights a fire under guys. You look at Dave Aranda at Baylor. He was coaching for his job this year. A lot of people like myself expected him to coach a few games and then be relieved of his duties. Instead, he went 8-4, and going into next year might have Baylor pushing to be a top half team in the Big 12. So I think that Lincoln Riley has to remind people that he's still a capable coach, or maybe it's proved he's still a capable coach. I don't think he's completely lost the thread. He finally hired a new defensive coordinator, but, you know, the offense is what really struggled for them last year. Their defense was fine. You know, their offense couldn't execute in key spots. It wasn't as explosive. They couldn't run the football at all. When they needed to, I mean, they went up to Washington and, you know, if they'd been able to run the ball just a little bit, they win that football game. And then situationally, they weren't as good as a veteran coach like Lincoln Riley should be. So those things have to improve. But I don't think, barring a Florida State level meltdown of 2-10 with your only wins being over Cal and Charleston Southern, barring that, Lincoln Riley is fine for this year. But I think this is kind of a stage setting campaign for next season.
I know Jen Cohen a little bit, the AD there. She hasn't told me this, but I gather that she's getting him all the resources he needs. And I think down deep, the hope at USC is that he would have a great season and someone from the NFL would hire him as a coordinator, and suddenly you're out of the contract, and it's a win-win situation, but we shall see. Pivot to Washington a little bit. Damon Williams Jr., he looked great in that Oregon-Washington game, although he got sacked a million times. I could see the future for Jed Fish. Do they have enough around him? Can they compete, you know, in the top 4 or 5 teams in the Big Ten? Or what's Washington's future look like by your view?
Well, I agree with you on Damon Williams. And I don't know if you watched the Sun Bowl against Louisville, but he was equally as good. The problem is he needs an entirely new offensive line. And I know that that's something Washington's well aware of. It wasn't a million sacks against Oregon, but it was 10, which is a pretty crazy number to allow, especially in a rivalry game when you should be, you know, every bit of fired up and ready to go. And obviously Oregon was, and they were at home, but 10 sacks is insane. I mean, the craziest play in that game was when they called a sprint out, which is designed to roll you away from the pressure. You still got sacked. Like, that was just not an offensive line that can do any better than they did, really, in the Big Ten. Maybe they could have won 7 games last year, but I think that was pretty close to their ceiling. I thought they'd be a 6-6 team, and the offensive line was one of those reasons. And that's where they have to start. And they have to be better on the defensive line as well. You know, those Kalen DeBoer teams that went to the, won a Pac-12 championship and went to the national championship game. Yeah, Penix and the receivers were incredible. They had the best offensive line in college football that won the Joe Moore Award, and they had a defensive line that was incredibly disruptive and physical, and they were just lacking that consistently this year. So I think at quarterback, Washington is totally set. I think Williams can be that kind of guy, and, you know, they've got a good number one receiver in Denzel Boston as well. I think that Jonah Coleman at running back, really good, but the trend play has to be not just better, John, it has to be a complete and total turnaround. If you want to talk about a Big Ten championship contender, I don't think they are that in 2025, but you keep Damon Williams around, no reason they couldn't be that in 26 if you recruit and develop in the trenches the way that they need to.
The Pac-12 is trying to rebuild. And Spencer, let me just throw this at you. They hire you as a consultant. They tell you that the aim is to build the best football conference that can possibly be built with the options available. Here are the options available. You already know who's in the New World Pac-12, the future Pac-12 with Boise State and San Diego State and Oregon State and Washington State and company. But you've got Memphis, you've got Tulane, you've got UNLV and Nevada, you've got Texas State, Air Force. You got to add 2 schools. Who are we adding, Spencer?
Well, if my only consideration is how do I build the best football conference, Memphis has to be target number one. They are a consistent winner year in and year out across a couple of different head coaches. You know, they've been to a New Year's Six Bowl within the last decade or so. They, I believe, went 9-3 this past year. Like, they are the best football program that is still out there. So if I have dealer's choice of any teams in the American Sun Belt, Mountain West, or the like, then yeah, Memphis is, I mean, Notre Dame needs a conference, so heck, why not? Memphis would be my top choice for football. And then the second one, I think you can go in a number of different directions. If you could get Tulane to reconsider their commitment to the American Conference, then that would be phenomenal as well. They've got a great up-and-coming head coach in John Sumrall, who might not be there for that long, but he's really good, and the program, I think, is starting to make the sort of commitments they need to be a consistent winner in that regard. I ponder UTSA from a football standpoint. They've got a really good head coach right now. I don't know if Jeff Traylor would ever leave if they stay at that sort of level, but that's where I'd be looking from a football standpoint. I think Dan Mullen at UNLV is really interesting. You know, Barry Odom showed us what that job can be. It's still a really difficult job. He just did an incredible job there, and we'll see if Mullen's able to replicate that. But if the only consideration is, hey, let's build the best football conference we can, then Memphis has to be at the top of the list, and then you can make a couple different arguments here and there, but Tigers got to be in that top spot.
Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On College Football Podcast, Locked On Ducks Podcast, and of course, the voice of the Southern Utah Thunderbirds in football and in basketball. Thank you for your time, my friend.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anytime, John. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you. There he goes. We'll talk about the Pac-12 and what else I know next.